If you haven't had quite enough of these presidential primary battles, take heart. There are 4 good weeks left. So what happens now? We're here in California to check in with 2 seasoned Beyond the Beltway political warriors. Willie Brown is the former Democratic mayor of San Francisco, and before that he was the Speaker of the California Assembly. Dan Schnur was a major player in John McCain's first run for the White House, and he's a veteran of 3 other Republican presidential campaigns. He's currently teaching at the University of California, Berkeley. Gentlemen, welcome.
David.
Nice to see you, David.
Willie Brown, you've been saying that you're A-okay with how long this Democratic primary season is going. Lots of democracy, a lot of talk about issues and so forth. Last time I read you saying that was about a month ago. You still feeling it's
absolutely
all right?
I think it's fabulous, as a matter of fact. The business of motivating people to participate in politics like never before.
You have the Indiana primary coming up, Dan. Do you think this is going to be bad for Obama next week? The expectation was, polls were showing that Clinton and Obama were neck and neck there.
Well, I think one of the common misperceptions about the state of Indiana is that it is a heavily rural state. And in fact, given the Chicago outer urban areas in the Indianapolis area, it's a very urban state. So this is a horrible week for Senator Obama for all sorts of reasons.
Let me turn to probably the topic of the moment, religion and politics. Topics guaranteed to break apart just about any polite dinner conversation. But you add to politics and religion the notion of race. And then you have this fellow, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who managed to push all those buttons all at the same time. And let's take a look just for a moment at a little piece of a presentation that Reverend Wright made at the National Press Club this week.
Politicians say what they say and do what they do based on electability, based on sound bites, based on polls, Huffington, whoever's doing the polls. Preachers say what they say because they're pastors. They have a different person to whom they're accountable. As I said, whether he gets elected or not, I'm still going to have to be answerable to God November 5th and January 21st. That's what I mean. I do what pastors do. He does what politicians do.
What does it mean to you when you hear Reverend Wright say that Obama does what politicians do?
That's an assessment that I don't think is inappropriate or inaccurate. Having been a politician for 40 years, I can assure you that I would not go on any stage, any place, where I wasn't conscious of what I was saying, hopefully, and what I was saying should dovetail with whatever message I'm trying to get out, and number two, whatever constituency I'm trying to influence, or whatever policy I'm trying to sell. That's what politicians do. They're not dishonest, as some people would say we may be, but we do situational presentations. Now, on the other hand, Mr. Obama has been marketing himself as not a politician, not exactly a politician. So he's got to be livid that Reverend Wright would classify him as a regular politician.
Because, of course, the implication is that Senator Obama doesn't always say what he believes. You hope a politician says what he believes, even if he's aware of the politics of what he's saying.
I think Senator Obama says what he believes, period. Now, I just don't think that he is unaware that he has to be careful how he says it and where he says it and when he says it.
This is a test for Barack Obama. And as impressive a politician as he is a relatively inexperienced politician. He was elected to the United States Senate in a campaign against Alan Keyes, which is not exactly hitting big league pitching. And this is his first serious test, prolonged serious test of adversity. Every candidate faces them. George W. Bush loses New Hampshire. Bill Clinton has his Jennifer Flowers moment. Some candidates recover from these things, like Clinton and Bush. Others, like John Kerry and Bob Dole, don't. This is the most significant political test that we've seen Barack Obama facing. But how he handles it over the next week or two, I do think makes or breaks his candidacy.
You know, it's interesting. John McCain has his own problem with a pastor, John Hagee, who I remember seeing this earlier this year. There was a big photo op with this minister from San Antonio, Texas, big flock that he has, standing next to John McCain with the big endorsement. Then it turns out that many Catholics in this country are quite offended by some of the things that Hagee has intimated over the years. And it's now getting a bit awkward for McCain in terms of which clergy you consort with.
Reverend Hagee has endorsed John McCain, as have dozens of members of the clergy. Certainly, Senator McCain probably should have denounced Hagee in more clear terms than he has.
He has distanced himself now.
He has. But I think equating the two is a difficult thing just because Reverend Wright has played such a central role in Senator Obama's personal and spiritual life over the years. And I think if you watched Senator Obama's press conference earlier this week, you saw somebody who was not only positioning himself politically, although he was certainly doing that, but somebody who was personally wounded.
Dan is correct. There is a closer relationship between the two. But there is one more factor that distinguishes them. The Obama-Wright issue had the underpinning of race. McCain and his pastor has nothing to do with race. It only has to do with whether or not some Catholics are concerned about his utterances and his conduct, whereas everybody other than every black in this country were concerned about the comments that Wright made on the question of race. There is a confined constituency in this country that will never vote for a woman and that will never vote for an African American. They'll never tell you that, but it's there. And I'm not crying wolf, so to speak. I'm a realist. And if I know it's there, then if it's Obama, I know I've got to do what Obama has done in this primary season. And that's increased the voting pool by 2 or 3 in terms of numbers and turnout and participation.
To make up for the people who would never vote for a black man.
To make up for the people that will never, Democrats in many cases, that will never vote for a person of color or vote for a woman. So I know that we have a job to do. It's almost like being black in America. You've got to be better.
Increase the pool of voters, though.
Absolutely.
That's the only way to... You're not going to convince the... 5 to 7%.
Don't waste your time. You don't have that much time in 3 months to take away many years of racism reposed in people, period. And it's not evil as such. It's just there. You can't get it out. But their kid may not be infected with the same virus. You got a shot at that kid. And Obama has proven that those shots with those kids are possible. And they can be persuaded, and he's been persuading them.
A significant double-digit number of Pennsylvania Democratic primary voters cast their ballot at least partially on the basis of race. And I think it speaks statistically to the point that the mayor's making.
And it's got to be worse in other states, because Pennsylvania is not exactly what you would call a hardcore state on the race issue. Pennsylvania is, you know, like the foundation of this nation, so there have been lots of Yankee influence in Pennsylvania. Well, you roll that into some other states, and you do have a major, major, major problem with race.
One wonders how this plays out among voters, but, you know, at some level, you want to ask yourself, how does it play out among the superdelegates who could really decide who becomes the Democratic nominee? Have you been a superdelegate? Really
20
bad?
Years.
Yeah.
I was a superdelegate. I was part of the creation of the superdelegate operation. You go back to the years of George McGovern. When we did the McGovern presentation and McGovern got the nomination in 72, we started to reform the party. And so we came up nationally with the idea of allowing people who are congresspersons, governors, state chairs, and people, luminaries like Al Gore and people like that, Bill Clinton, ex-presidents, all those people gained status as what we call unpledged delegates. I don't know who tagged them super delegates, but they are unpledged delegates whose responsibility it is to look out for the Democratic Party. These people are the keepers of the Holy Grail, so to speak. They are the individuals who, under all circumstances, can withstand the popular winds, if necessary, to protect the integrity of the Democratic Party. Obama's issue in the last week and a half has had more to do with addressing their concerns. And believe me, they know that Dan and his crowd have not unloaded on Obama. And believe me, they are looking at Obama's ability to repair himself in this short time span. If he cannot, I would predict it'll be a lot more difficult for him to persuade that collection of unpledged delegates. Their interest is in defeating the Republican nominee.
But if it's okay, David, I want to go back to something that the mayor said, because I found this profoundly interesting. We have here one of the creators of this superdelegate or unpledged delegate system. And what I hear him saying, and excuse me for paraphrasing, is that these unpledged delegates, these superdelegates, this process was put in place in order to make sure, and I know you don't have to use this language, to make sure that the delegates don't go rushing off in some overly peculiar direction. They're there to
perhaps
exercise,
to the left.
Yeah, some super.
Or to the right.
Or to the right.
Or
any, doesn't matter.
So it's adult supervision, if you will, and you don't have to use the terms. But the superdelegates were created to restore some order to the process, one that process seems to be losing order. That, to me, sounds like a pretty good case for telling this year's superdelegates to vote their conscience. And I know you are unaligned in this race, Mr. Mayor, but that's precisely the case that Senator Clinton's campaign has been making, that you should not feel obligated to your constituents. You were appointed a superdelegate for a reason, and you should vote in what you believe to be your party's best interests.
When are we ever going to hear from these unpledged superdelegates?
You hear
anytime
from
soon?
Them every day. One of the unpledged delegates, after Obama's speech, went for Obama. Two, on the same time, went for Clinton. So every day you're hearing, and people should know that already more than 550 of those so-called 800 persons have made their choice. And every day others are making their choice. Some probably won't ever make a choice. Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi may never make a choice. Howard Dean, as the chair of the National Committee, may never make a choice. So there are probably 20 or 30 who are in the category they will not choose. But the other 200 or so, I think, will be online and will have said where they are long before the month of June expires.
Is that right? So maybe late May, going to Memorial Day, we might know who the Democrats are going to have
no,
on the
no,
ticket?
No. I don't think you'll know that early. I think you've got to go through the last primary. I don't think there will be, because you see, there are more than 250 outstanding votes that haven't yet even been addressed.
Well, the last primary in
Michigan
the Democrat.
Michigan and Florida.
Well,
have
that's
not
that
been
whole
addressed.
Issue. Exactly.
Yeah. So you can't envision winning this thing without those two states. And that's why you're going to see, sooner than later, compromises being floated out by responsible people on how you settle Michigan and how you settle Florida. Florida is easier, by the way, because both names were on the ballot in Florida. But in Michigan, only Hillary was on the ballot. So the issue is, how do you now go for some resolution there?
But Willie Brown, doesn't any deal to seat some of the Florida or Michigan delegates just favor Hillary Clinton?
You can't view a solution as favoring or not favoring. Always somebody is going to be advantaged. I can assure you, however, that if you're going to win the presidency, you have got to put Florida and Michigan in the selection process. And you've got to do it in a way in which a majority of the people on the floor of the convention approves. No solution can be done unless you have a majority of the people voting on the floor supporting it.
And here's the man who understands that type of politics, talking about just that issue. He's the expert.
Well, the irony here, or the appropriateness here, of Willie Brown talking about contested delegations fighting to be seated at a Democratic National Convention is extraordinary, because one of the most exciting, one of the most inspiring moments in American political history was at the 1972 Democratic Convention, I'm told by my elders.
I seem to remember back when I was 12, George McGovern won California. Winner take all was the original rule, right?
And this man took to the floor of the convention and gave an awe-inspiring speech in which he told the convention, give me back my delegation. And he not only turned the sentiment on the floor of that convention, but if you don't mind me saying so, Mr. Mayor, began to make his name in national politics on the strength of that speech. And I wonder if there is an up-and-coming young Democratic poll from the state of Florida or the state of Michigan who's going to be similarly center stage in Denver this year, when the Obama and Clinton forces go to the floor of the convention to battle out which delegation gets seated.
Just so we understand, though, you're battling off a challenge. There were the people who didn't like McGovern, thought he was perhaps too left-wing, who wanted to change the rule.
What they were wrong about was trying to change the nature of the selection process in the middle of the selection process. The rules were the rules. California was winner take all. And we won that fight. And in winning that fight, we got the nomination.
The winner take all situation to me has been extraordinarily overlooked throughout this primary season. Because if the Democrats had a winner take all system in which all delegates were pledged in each state's primary.
Yeah, what happens in that situation?
If every Democratic primary so far had given their delegates in total to the winner of that state's primary, the way the Republicans do, Senator Clinton would have secured the nomination many weeks ago on the strength of winning California, on the strength of winning New York and other large states. On the flip side, you know, we have a winner-take-all system, which helped McCain secure the nomination earlier. If we had the same kind of a proportional system that the Democrats do, Senator McCain and Governor Huckabee would still be running for the nomination. And just like Obama and Clinton have had to rush to the left as their primaries worn on, our party's candidates would be listing off so far to the right that Senator McCain would be giving his speeches in tongues in order to secure our delegates. But it's a fundamental...
Which I would love every second of. I think that's the true McCain.
Hey. But that's it's a fundamental difference between the two parties. Republicans are very no-nonsense about this. We say, winner take all, you win, you lose, you go on, you go home. The Democrats say, you didn't lose. You finished second.
Well, but Dan, keep in mind, the Democrats say that because they don't have the same level of party loyalty that you've demonstrated your party has demonstrated over the years. You don't hear people talking about the potential for divisiveness among Republicans as you do among Democrats. Democrats are always talking about taking their marbles and go home if they don't prevail or if their side doesn't prevail.
Well, giving delegates to all the candidates who run sounds a little bit like the Children's Soccer League where everybody gets a trophy at the end of the season.
Well, I want to ask about that. You mentioned take your marbles and go home. I would like to humbly, at this moment in history, dub it the sore loser syndrome. You have a lot of people, especially on the Democratic side, who love their candidate, but it might be Hillary Clinton or it might be Barack Obama. What do you think about the possibility that some Democrats will just lose enthusiasm because their man or woman is not on the ticket and just not show up on election day?
There will be some. Be advised. There always are some who will not participate because they were into a personality, not policy. They were into a personality, not principle. But I maintain that the level of participation in these series of primaries involving so many talented people has been so enthusiastically received by Democrats generally. The level of financial participation is unprecedented. I don't think that will be abated, whether it's Clinton or whether it's Obama.
You might have thought that. I saw this poll, though, from the Gallup organization that said if it's Obama versus McCain, 27% switch over to McCain.
I don't believe that for a minute, and I will tell you why. The overwhelming majority of Clinton supporters or Obama supporters, should Clinton win, as angry as they are now, they are so intense in their anger toward this White House and toward this administration.
That'll trump it.
They could settle this nomination on Halloween, and they'll come together in time for a general election the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. I call it the politics of hunger. The longer it's been since you've been invited to a state dinner at the White House, the hungrier you get.
I must be pretty hungry. No one's ever asked.
but just like after 8 years of Clinton Gore, Republicans were motivated in terms of turnout in primaries, in terms of fundraising, in terms of enthusiasm. This year, the Democrats, after 8 years on the outside, are just as motivated. And I agree with the mayor that I don't think that enthusiasm goes away in a general election.
Willie Brown?
And I think that there are some other factors that are uniquely favorable to Democrats. I think the general public views the economy as being a burden for the Republicans now, equal almost to the war. Democrats handle this correctly. I don't think the Republicans have an answer. McCain is going around trying to display new credentials to make him something different from being Mac Bush, as some people have often referred to him as. I don't think come September 1st, no matter what he does in May, June, July, and August, that's going to change people's perception.
Unless, one might argue, it isn't the economy late in the fall that is dominating people's minds. What if it's national security? John McCain has a track record there.
John McCain has a track record, but the war is a burden, and the war will continue to be a burden. The war secured Nancy Pelosi's speakership. Absolutely nothing else. McCain can't get away from that. As a matter of fact, McCain trying to shake his comments about how many years we would continue in Iraq is almost like Obama trying to shake Jeremiah Wright.
That said, I think Senator McCain has some advantages that another Republican nominee would not have. Number one, my friend Willie Brown talks about the new McCain attempting to establish himself at the center. But in fact, that has been John McCain throughout his career. And even if you disagree with him on certain issues, I think you need to grant him points for consistency on issues like immigration, on issues like global warming, on issues like stem cell research, on issues like judicial selection. It's because he comes from the party of the president who currently occupies the White House. It is a big obstacle for him. But I also think that talking about tax increases during a recession creates a problem for the Democratic nominee. And Senator McCain, I think, does have somewhat of an advantage in that discussion over over taxes. By supporting an extension of the current tax cuts, he essentially is able to say to voters who are worried about a recession, I'm not the candidate who's going to take that money away from you. It's that other candidate over there.
Now, one thing before we go, an important issue. Talk nationally, but we're all having this lovely chat right here in California. No way John McCain can win a state like California, no way, even though there's a moderate Republican governor. What do you think, Willie Brown?
I think he'd better spend time in some place where he has a possibility of winning.
And not California.
The numbers are so overwhelming in California. The political structure of California, the infrastructure on the Democratic side is so much greater than it is from power standpoint on the Republican side. And there are so few Republican stars available to be his surrogates in California. Were I managing McCain, I'd spend more time in Ohio and Pennsylvania than I would in California.
Still, 55 sweet electoral votes in this state. Should McCain just stay out?
It's going to be tempting for the McCain campaign, and I think it's tempting for a good reason. Because California, much more than being a Democratic state, and certainly not a liberal state, is a centrist state. For the most part, the politicians we elect in statewide elections, whether it's Arnold Schwarzenegger and Pete Wilson on one side, whether it's Gray Davis and Dianne Feinstein on the other, tend to be fairly centrist candidates. If you look at the relatively centrist positions that he has staked out on global warming, on stem cell research, on campaign finance reform, and on illegal immigration, I think it gives him at least a fighting chance here.
So, Willie Brown, you ever going to tell us who you're going to support? Not here today, I understand.
I'd love nothing better than participate in trying to solve the Florida Michigan issue, and I think the only way that I could effectively do that, I'd have to be perceived as potentially supportive of either one of them. They'd have to be interested in having me as part of their team.
And as a Republican, there is nothing I would like to see more than the Democratic Party in such a situation in Denver where they needed the likes of Willie Brown to come in and help them solve this mess.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Dan Schnoor, veteran of many Republican political campaigns, now teaches at University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Southern California. Willie Brown, a legendary California politician, former mayor of San Francisco, and author of the new biography, Basic Brown, My Life in Our Times. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.